Grace and peace to each one of you this morning. It's good to be here with you all. I was sorry to have missed last Sunday, and I really appreciated Simon pinch hitting for me on very short notice. I was listening into the service, but did not feel in any way, shape, ready or able to be here. Thankfully, I'm feeling a lot better this morning. So, since I was not here, we kind of messed up the sequence of our text, which I'm sorry for, but I don't think it's going to do violence to our understanding or the flow of it. The text for this morning is in Ephesians 6, so if you want to turn there a while. Excuse me. Ephesians 6, 1 to 4. And I think this is a very familiar passage. Very often quoted verse, especially verse 1, is quoted very often, especially to young children. But hopefully the message today will be about more than just instruction to children to obey their parents. I think verses 1 to 4 are really about addressing the parent-child relationship and the complex thing that is. And I feel confident in, as I bring this message, I feel confident that we all can relate to this. Because we all are part of families. we're all part of families. We come from families. We hopefully are enjoying the families that God has placed us in. But as I thought about bringing a message on this, I realized that we all have failures in our families too. And especially as I looked at the text and was meditating on it and thinking about it, I thought about the fact that in a number of ways I see myself critically through this passage, and I see ways that I have not done well with my family. And my guess was that as I was bringing this message, there would be more of you who would face that challenge as well and say, you know, there's things I wish I would have done differently. I wish I could have said this or done that. And the message this morning isn't to bring condemnation to us, but hopefully to bring grace and the truth of God to bear on our family situations in the light of God's Word. I think a lot of us also have a lot of joy in our families. Families can be a very joy-filled and pleasant thing. And lots of good interactions and memories, and I hope that's the case for us. So, what does God's Word have for us today? Well, I do want to read the text here. Our text is from verse 1 through verse 4, and Paul says, "Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor thy father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with thee, and thou mayest live long on the earth. And ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord." So I'm quite certain that anyone under the age of 10 this morning has had this verse quoted to them. They've probably memorized it. Children, obey your parents. That's what parents say to their children. And for those of you who were here last Sunday evening, you heard it then as well. And I'm not quite sure why we got it twice for you children. But I'm sure God had a purpose in that. I really enjoyed Brother Duff's children's class and the story he told there of Alara and her mother and the prompt obedience that was called for there. We enjoyed that, and Brother Duff, at our house, we thought maybe we should hear some more stories read by you. We enjoyed the story very much. But the point was the example of prompt obedience. Mother, in the story, Mother had told Laura, "You need to come," and she came right away and obeyed immediately. And it probably, almost certainly, was to their safety. I've also heard a story of a boy who was playing in the yard, and this was some tropical climate. I'm not sure exactly where it took place, and maybe it's a fictional story. I don't know. But as he's playing in the yard under a tree, his father is sitting on the porch looking out across the yard, and he sees a snake, a poisonous snake, in the tree. just above the boy's head. And so he tells his son to drop to his knees and crawl towards him. Now, that's kind of an unusual instruction, but the boy did and crawled to his father quickly. After he was there, his father, of course, pointed out that there was a snake just above where he was, and it could have been a very deadly situation. But I think probably you children, at least if children in other homes are like our home, it's kind of tempting to sometimes, if parents give strange, unusual instructions, to say, why? Why do I need to do that? And to question why these strange orders are necessary. But you know, prompt obedience is so crucial. And really, as I thought about that, I realized it's not just for children either. Prompt obedience is necessary for all of us. And we don't understand always why we need to do what we need to do, what we've been told to do. I think it's important for you children to understand, and I think your parents are probably trying to teach you this, that slow obedience, or obedience on your timetable or your schedule, isn't really obedience at all. If you're trying to decide when you're going to do what your parents tell you to do, that's not really obedience. But as I thought about this instruction, children, obey your parents, one of the questions that I had was, who is this instruction for? Is this verse directed at 2-year-olds, 6-year-olds, 8-year-olds, or 14-year-olds, or 40-year-olds, or who is supposed to do this? And right along with it, the other question would be, how old do you have to be before this verse no longer applies to you? Okay, so for you children, are you looking forward to some age, whatever that is, when you won't have to do this anymore? You won't have to obey your parents, for this is right. Well, we need to decide who this children is talking about. Now, in the New Testament, there are different places that children are talked about, or the word child is used. And there are different Greek words used to indicate the child or the children that are being addressed. One of these verses is in Galatians 4, 1 and 2. And if we would turn there, in Galatians 4, it tells us, it's talking about children, and it says that the heir, as long as he is a child, differeth nothing from a servant, though he be Lord of all. Or we could go over to 1 Corinthians 13, where it talks about when we're children, we speak as a child. And he says, I understood as a child, I thought as a child, but when I became a man, I put away childish things. Now, in those two verses that I read, the word in the original indicates someone who is not speaking, someone who can't talk yet. That's literally what the word child means in those verses. And so the heir, even though he is the heir and going to inherit everything and will eventually have ultimate control over his possessions, while he is an infant, he can't exercise any of that yet and is not any different in practical matters from a servant, someone who is working in the household. And so so also in 1 Corinthians 13, where it's talking about childish things, we're talking about things that infants do and say. But other places in the Bible, the word child is used, and it's not clearly talking about an infant. And I came across a verse in Luke 2:43 where it's talking about Jesus. And it says, and when they had fulfilled the days, this is where Jesus went with his parents up to Jerusalem. And as they got ready to return home, it says the child Jesus tarried behind in Jerusalem, and Joseph and his mother knew not of it. And so there, Jesus wasn't a baby, he was not an infant, but he was clearly young, a young child. But interestingly enough, that is not the word, neither of those are the words used in Ephesians 6, verse 1 here, when it's talking about children. The word used here in Ephesians 6 is a word that means descendant of any age, someone who is the descendant of parents. So my question to you, children who are wondering when you get to stop obeying your parents, is when are you going to stop being a descendant of your parents? Can you tell me, Lawrence, when are you going to stop being a descendant of your parents? Maybe that's too big of a word for you. Or Carl, can you answer that? When are you going to stop being a descendant of your parents? Well, I hope not, because I hope you're always a descendant of your parents. I hope you're always their son, even after they're dead and gone, and you're 67, I don't know, 90 years old, you'll still be the son of Jonathan, right? Really, we never stop being a descendant of our parents. And I think the instruction to all of us here today is that we should never stop or cease obeying and honoring our parents. And as I thought about this instruction to obey and honor, my mind went to the story in Jeremiah 35. And in some ways, I felt like these four verses were almost too much of a text for this morning. We obviously can't give a whole complete picture of child training in 50 minutes. Life is too complex to really cover all of it. But I did want to at least allude to the story of the Rechabites in Jeremiah 35. And there's a lot of setting to this, because this was in a fairly difficult and dark time in Israel's history, when there was a lot of disobedience, and God's people were not following him and were turning away from his instruction, his word to them. And God uses a family here to teach the people of Israel a lesson. And in the story here, Jeremiah calls, well, he gets instructions from God. God tells him to call in the Rechabites and to bring them to God's house, into one of the chambers there, and give them wine to drink, set wine before them. And so Jeremiah does that, and he brings them in, and he sets them around the table, and he sets out wine before them. And they say, no thanks, we don't do that. Now, this wasn't an instruction to the people of Israel that they weren't supposed to drink wine. But this family said, we don't do that. They said, we will drink no wine, for Jonadab, the son of Rechab, our father, commanded us, saying, ye shall drink no wine, neither ye nor your sons forever. Neither shall you build house, nor sow seed, nor plant vineyard, nor have any. But all your days you shall dwell in tents, that you may live many days in the land where ye be strangers. And they go on to talk about the fact that they've done this for all of these years since that command. And it was quite some time. I don't remember the exact number of years between the time that Jonadab told them this and the time that Jeremiah is speaking to them. But quite a long period of time had elapsed. And they still have not done this. They are still living in tents. They are still not drinking wine. Even though at the moment when this story takes place, it says that Nebuchadnezzar had come into the land and was in the process of harassing the countryside. So the Rechabites had come into Jerusalem for the safety of the city walls. But they were still following this instruction, this command, that their father, grandfather, I'm not sure how many generations back, had given them. And it was to their advantage. It was to their safety. It had preserved them as a family all of these years. They still had this tradition of not living in town or building houses or drinking wine. And God's point to the people of Israel was that even though he's talked to them and he's told them what they should do, they weren't listening. But this family, the Rechabites, were listening to their father's instruction. And God valued that. And God pronounces an incredible blessing on this family. In verse 18 of chapter 35, this is what God said. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, because you have obeyed the commandment of Jonadab your father and kept all his precepts, and had done and done according to all that he hath commanded you. Therefore, thus saith the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, Jonadab the son of Rechab shall not want a man to stand before me forever. God says, these people, this family, has followed the instruction of their father. They have obeyed their father. And as a reward for that obedience, I will have a son of Rechab in my congregation forever. That's an incredible promise and blessing, that there's going to be a line of faithfulness in that family forever. What does this mean then? Does this mean that I need to obey precisely everything my father told me for the rest of my life? Well, I think it's important to understand what he's saying here. I think he's talking about honoring and obeying the truths that our parents pass on to us. And I don't think he's speaking of dependence versus independence. As I think about my children, I think about the fact that when they're young, when they're 1 and 2 years old, maybe even 3 years old, they're very dependent on me as a parent. And they need lots of specific guidance about how to interact with the world. They really don't know what happens. They don't know yet, when they're 2 and 3 especially, what happens if you just stay up to all hours of the night and don't get your sleep. They don't understand schedules very well. There's so much about the world that they haven't had an opportunity to learn about yet. And so they need my specific guidance, and they need their parents' care and specific instructions on dealing with everyday matters. But we know that every person with a normal intellect matures beyond that fairly quickly and becomes capable of directing their own life and arranging their own schedule and maturing to understand the consequences of the decisions they make and the consequences of their actions and their choices. And quickly, we hope, matures beyond the position of needing specific, constant direction as to what they should do or shouldn't do in normal, everyday situations. The other thing that I think it's important to recognize is there's also issues of authority and responsibility. And we recognize that parents are responsible for their children. They're responsible to give direction and guidance to those under their care. Of course, this responsibility is given to parents. They bring children into the world, and there's just this expectation. If you have children, you need to take care of them. You need to provide for them. You need to be responsible for the things they do. And so, yes, if my children are misbehaving and maybe they're throwing things or acting in destructive ways to other people's property, they really can't make amends for that yet if they're young. I need to take care of that, and I'm responsible for the things they do. And so I have a responsibility and I have an authority over my children. But I think the Bible is very clear that there's also other authority and responsibility that's given. And for instance, there's the authority to pastors and spiritual leaders to watch over a group of people, a congregation, to speak into the lives of people. But not only that, I think we have to remember that eventually the tables are turned as well. So at this point in my life, I'm giving instructions to my children. I'm caring for them. I'm responsible for them. But depending on the life and the health that God gives me, I'm thinking about how it will likely be, say, 40 years from now, when, Stephen will be 40. How old will you be in 40 years, Stephen? 47? Older than I am now, and I'll be almost 90. And I'd expect at that point, Stephen may need to tell me some things. If I'm still of sound mind and at least have some health, Stephen may be in a position where he needs to tell me things. Like maybe he might have to tell me I need to stop driving, that it's not safe to be driving anymore. Or he may need to tell me that I should do something, it's really the best thing to do, that my mind's not working the clearest anymore. And that's just a normal part of our lives. Children, as they get older, care for their parents. And I don't think this command for children to obey their parents means that when I'm 90, if the Lord allows me to live that long, that I am still going to be telling Stephen what he's supposed to be doing, because he may have a responsibility to tell me what to do when we get to that point. And I want to be open to that when that time comes. But what we're talking about here is the honor that is due to our parents. And in bringing this teaching to us, Paul takes us back to the command given in Exodus, honor thy father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise. The first commandment that was given with a specific promise attached to it, a specific reward for doing this commandment. Exodus 20:12 says, honor thy father and thy mother, that thy days may be long upon the earth, which the Lord thy God giveth thee. And you'll notice here, it's clear in the verse from Exodus, this is not talking about just children under 12 or under 6. This is a lifelong command to everyone to give honor to their parents, to value highly the input and instruction that their parents give them. And the promise that's given here is that it will be, that it may, well, in Exodus, the promise is that thy days may be long upon the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee. And I wonder if that's not why God valued the instructions of Jonadab so highly, even though they were not commands that God gave specifically. Jonadab had, I think, a vision for the preservation of his family. He really wanted his family to stay faithful to God. And he wanted the blessing of God to rest on them. And he wanted their days to be long in the land that they lived in. And so he said, here is how our family is going to do that. He says, we want to stay a long time in this land. And I want my family to be preserved in this land. So here's how we're going to go about doing it. And his family honored that, and they were preserved, and God blessed them. The blessing is that it will go well with us. Does that mean it will go perfectly? No, I don't think so. But you know, to young people and children, parents have a lot of wisdom that has accumulated over the years and the life experiences that they've had. And I know from experience, it's hard to see this from a 16 to 18-year-old perspective. By the time you're 16, 17, 18, you're through school, you've learned a lot of things, your mind has awoken, hopefully, to all of the, or at least some of the latent possibilities that exist in your life. And from that perspective, the world seems somewhat simple sometimes. You know, I understand, I know things, I'm ready to go out and do things. I wish I could remember what the discussion was that I was having with my father. Actually, the discussion I remember was Laverne Hirschberger had come to visit, and he and I and my father were discussing an issue. I wish I could remember what it was we were discussing. But Laverne and I saw it one way, and my father was trying to tell us that it really wasn't that way. At least he didn't think so. And I remember him saying something to this effect, that he told us what he thought, and he said, that's how I see it. I really think it is this way. And I really do think that when you get older, that you'll see it that way too. That it will make more sense from that perspective. And thinking back, whatever the issue was, I do know I came back to it later and realized that what he was saying had a lot of truth to it. But I know that from a young person's perspective, it's not always easy to see that. And what I'm finding in myself, and this was probably my father too, at this point in my life, there's a lot of stresses, there's a lot happening, and I'm becoming, I think, a lot more cautious than I was when I was 18 and 19. It was, you know, I thought I knew things back then. I was ready to go. I thought I understood a lot of things. But the older I get, the more I realize I don't understand. And I'm seeing more consequences for things that I didn't see when I was young. And really, if we do honor, if we do obey the instructions, the guidance that our parents give us, it will bring a stability of life and purpose to our lives. And I think that's what God is trying to tell us here, that it may be well with thee, and thou mayest live long on the earth. The idea of the age, I would say, if I would describe the idea of the age presently, it is that everyone needs to enter into their own experience, their own wisdom, their own self, and to explore the world from their own perspective, and to do things the way they want to do it, and experience it all themselves the way they want to do it. But you know, that's not God's perspective. God's perspective is that there's a godly wisdom that is contained in older people that ought to be passed down to their descendants. A godly wisdom that ought to be imparted to their children of any age. Godly instructions about what will happen, what the consequences are to life choices, the truth, hard-earned truth that they've gained by experience over many years. And I think it's important for all of us to realize that honor, giving honor to those who are our parents, will bring a stability of life and purpose to us. But you could ask the question then, okay, so I'm supposed to honor my parents. I'm supposed to do the things that they tell me to do. What if my parents aren't worthy of this? And as I was thinking about calling my children to obey me, I realize I'm not a perfect parent. And none of us are perfect parents. None of us do this perfectly. But the Bible makes it clear that this obedience that children are called to is obedience in the Lord. Children, obey your parents in the Lord. And I think we have to remember that the context for the obedience is in the Lord. And in regard to the instructions and the truth of His Word, I would be clearly stepping out of my place under Christ if I were to tell my children to do things that are wrong. For instance, if I would tell one of my children to go steal something. So if I tell Timothy to go steal something for me, that's wrong, and you shouldn't obey me in that. But that's not the kind of thing we're talking about here. We're talking about instructions that are in the Lord. And in the context of God's biblical wisdom. But even if parents aren't what they should be, even if they are doing wrong themselves or are not understanding the truth, our parents still are our parents. God has given us to them, or them to us, you could say. And even if they are not seemingly deserving of the honor or the obedience, then simply by the fact that they are our parents, we do owe them a debt of honor. But I did want to talk to parents as well, to fathers and mothers. Verse 4 goes on to address fathers specifically. Now, as I was reading this and talking to my family about it, there was something that I noticed about this verse, verse 4, that was interesting. And my children thought it was interesting, too. I noticed that there's no command here for the fathers to make the children obey. There's a command to children to obey their parents, but no command to parents to make their children obey. And my children thought that was pretty good. But that's not the end of the story, or the end of the account either, for that matter. Instead, he says, "And ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord." We're talking about bringing up children. There again, I'm pretty sure that word is also the same word used in verse 1. We're not talking about just little children. We're talking about children of any age. Instructions to fathers. I found it interesting that Paul's first instruction here is to fathers to not provoke their children to wrath. Not provoke your children to anger. And I'll be frank with you, I've struggled with this. How do I understand this instruction? How do I put this to practice? Because, quite frankly, sometimes my dependent children, those who are very young, have gotten upset at things I've told them to do. Sometimes they're clearly not happy about the instructions I give them. It might be time to go to bed, and they are clearly not interested in doing that. And so if my child gets angry because I told them to lay down, and we're talking about a 2-year-old here, it's time to lay down and go to sleep, and they get angry about that, is that a violation of verse 4 and something I'm not supposed to do? I don't think so. I don't think that's what he's addressing here. I think what he's addressing is the fact that as a father, I'm responsible for how my children respond to the instructions and the direction I give to them. And I think what Paul is addressing here is the abuse of authority. And I think as I was thinking about what to say to fathers and to parents today, I realized that the instruction for children to obey their parents throughout their lives could look from a child's perspective like, I'm stuck in this. I'm forever. I'm going to have to do whatever it was my parents told me to do. But I think verse 4 is the counterpart to that and a warning to us as fathers to think very carefully about what we require of our children. And I realize that as we look at our families, a lot of our public image is bound up in our children. And I think those of you who have had children can identify with me, both fathers and mothers. We see our children getting older and interacting with the world, and we feel good when they're looked well on, and you know, we might feel bad if they're reflecting negatively on our training. And so we want to get this right. We want to make sure that our children do the right things. We're going to make this happen. We're going to see to it that they do what we want them to do. And in some level, that's expected. So my 2-year-old, it's time to go to bed, and I'm going to say, look, it's time to go to bed. There's no questioning this fact. It really is time to do this. But I think somehow this needs to change as the child gets older. Because telling my 2-year-old that it's time to go to bed is a little different from telling my 17-year-old it's time to go to bed. Somehow there seems to be a difference there. And the question that I wrestle with sometimes, and I'm right in the middle of it, and you can tell me if I'm getting it wrong, is where does that change? How do we know where that shift happens? There's obviously a process whereby a child grows up and matures and becomes responsible for themselves. And as my children grow up and mature and come into their own maturity, I want to pass on to them the beliefs that I have, my convictions. I want to pass on to them the way I do things. But how do I go about that? One of the things that I think is challenging is understanding at what age a child should be independent and not dependent on their parents anymore for specific instructions and specific guidance. In other words, at what point is the parent no longer responsible for what the child does or doesn't do? And the government recognizes that parents are responsible for what their child does and doesn't do. The question is, what age does that happen? And so, the age that the government recognizes varies. You could say it's 18. The government says when you turn 18, then you can do whatever you want to do. So 17, you still have to do whatever your parents say. 18, you can do whatever you want to do. That's the government's perspective. But then you could say maybe it's up to age 26, because I think that's the age that children, dependent children, can stay on their parents' insurance, health insurance policy. So to me, that feels like the government's saying, parents, you're still responsible for them till they're, you know, 26, if they're still living at home. But my feeling on it, and this is just me personally speaking, I think Christian parents should want to see that maturity, that the ability of the child to be responsible for themselves happening at a younger age than what the government and general society sees. And part of what has influenced my thinking on that is the fact that in the Jewish culture, they have a ceremony called a bar mitzvah. And bar mitzvah is actually, I'm sorry, that's not the ceremony. That's the name of the title given to a young Jewish boy when he turns 13. He becomes a bar mitzvah. That's not the name of the ceremony. It's the title of the person, because it literally means son of the commandment. And so their understanding is at 13 that child is not responsible to his parents anymore. He's responsible to the law. And he becomes responsible to keep the law at that point. Not the law of his parents, but the law of God. And at 13 then, he's a member of the congregation. And he can participate in the congregation's activities as if he were an adult. He becomes a son of the commandment. 13 seems kind of young to me. But that's the transition point that they have. My goal, and this is what I want for my children. I want my children to become responsible for themselves. I want them to mature, to grow up. I don't want to deny them the joy and innocency of childhood. But I do want them to step into responsibility for themselves, to understand what it means to accept the consequences of their own actions, the consequences of their own choices, and what it means to be an adult person. I think it's strange that the world has pushed that age off farther and farther. It hasn't always been that way. And we could talk this about the whole idea of adolescence and the teen years and all of that. We don't have time this morning. But I think my heart is that we try to, as much as we can and as quickly as we can, help our children not to rely on us as parents, but to stand on their own two feet as responsible people. And as part of that, I want to teach them as quickly as I can the convictions I have and the beliefs that I have, but yet be honest whenever it comes to preferences and not push things on them that are not really God's command. I think this is something that my father didn't say specifically, but gave a good example to me in. I feel like he can, and I wish I could quote him or say when he told me this, but the impression that I got as I was growing up was that this is his home, and this is the way we're going to do things in his home. Whenever I start my home, it's fine if I do things differently. But then there were convictions. There are things he said, this is right. This is what we're going to do. No debate, no questions. For instance, going to church when there's a church service. That was just drilled into us. If there was a church service, you were there. No questions, no debate. We had to be really, really sick to miss church. And if you were sick enough, maybe you went along to church and stayed in the van or something, if it wasn't in the middle of winter. But it was drilled into us that this was extremely important. And it's still important to me. I think that's an instruction of my father that I still feel very strongly about. But then there were other things that he didn't, put down in as much in black and white, but left a little more open. And I feel like there's issues in our home that are that way as well, where this is how I think it's best for me to raise my children. Now, I don't say that it's the best way for you all. And if my children choose to do it differently, I hope to be there to help give them wisdom and give them insights into it. For instance, in our home, we have a policy of not watching videos. It's just a very rare occasion if we ever do watch a video. If my children decide to do it differently in their homes, I'm fine with that, and I don't have a problem with that. But that's just something that we've decided in our home. But my concern is that too often, as I think about this thing of provoking our children to wrath, what I find in myself is too easy of a tendency to push onto my children the things that I want them to do to reflect well on me. It isn't biblical principles. It's not specific doctrinal issues that I want them to follow, but just things that I want them to do to make me look good. But I want to be careful not to create a resentment in my children towards those kinds of things. Now, obviously, we're not talking about two-year-olds. We can't. There's a difference there. We can't be flexible in that regard. But hopefully, as our children grow up and become mature and able to stand on their own 2 feet, we can talk about the instructions we're giving, and we can have some discussion about it so that the underlying principles, the beliefs, the underlying convictions can come through, and that they can see why it is that we believe the way that we do and why it is that we do what we do. Moving on, the second instruction to fathers is to bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. The word bring them up here is literally to nourish. Nourish your children in the instruction and discipline of God. Or the ESV says it in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. I like the word nourish. It gives the idea of tender care. At least that's the idea that I get out of it. Giving someone who needs care what they need to flourish and to grow. And this isn't just correction. This isn't just spankings. This isn't just it's time to go to bed, so you go do that right now. Or it's time to do the dishes, so get up from the table and go do it immediately. This isn't just commands and specific instructions to do things. But he says here we're to nurture them in the instruction and discipline of the Lord. What is he saying? Well, I think we all know that children arrive in the world without a lot of self-control, without a lot of discipline. And it's the whole purpose of parents to guide them into discipline and understand what God's word says about our behavior. And this is where, yes, you do have to obey, comes in, because we could go back to Proverbs and it says that foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child. It's just, we have to accept the fact that our children come into the world with a sin nature, with foolishness, with rebellion, already placed there in their hearts. The seed is there. And it's the job of parents to get rid of that, to drive it away with the rod of correction. And we need to teach our children the law of consequences. If you do this, whatever it is, there will be consequences for it. Something will happen. That's just a fact of life. It's a part of the discipline of God. And the discipline of God is something that they'll experience all of their life. God's going to be working, bringing things to bear on their life. And the younger that we can instill that in them, the younger that we can get them to understand the law of consequences, the better their life will be. And once again, they will have a stability of life and purpose as they understand that. But the discipline and instruction of the Lord is so much more than just about obedience. And as I think about this instruction to fathers to nurture in the instruction of the Lord, this is about more than just telling your children things. This is about more than just giving commands or saying, do this, this, and this down a list. I think it's about that. It's about giving specific instructions, but even more importantly, I think it's about modeling behavior, about showing children what it means to live according to the discipline and instruction of the Lord. And here again, not to lift my own father up, because he was definitely a very, very human person. But I feel like in my own formative years, I had a lot of lessons in things that he did. For instance, I feel like this has profoundly shaped me and affected how I relate to church issues. When I was 15 and 16, my father was going through a very difficult time in relating to the church we were in. There were disagreements. He didn't see things the way the church leadership did. He differed pretty fundamentally with them on some issues. And the natural thing for a teenager in that kind of situation, I think, would have been for me to either reject what my father had to say or what the church had to say. And there are a lot of teenagers who do that. They get into a stressful church situation and they just give it all up at that point. But the thing that I felt like my father passed on to me in that made such a big difference was that he never spoke negatively about anybody in the situation at all. So my brother and I knew that he didn't agree with the ministers of the church, but we didn't know what he disagreed with them in. We knew there was tension and things weren't going well, but we didn't know why. And he told us, I'm not going to tell you why. When you get older, I'll tell you. When the situation's over, I'll tell you. And we've gone back and talked about it. But in the middle of the situation, I didn't know what they were disagreeing about or didn't see eye to eye on. And as a result, I had a respect for those church leaders that would not have been possible any other way. And I think he was modeling the value of humility, of not speaking evil of others, and giving grace. And those are the kind of things that have profoundly shaped how I relate to others. And I really have valued highly that instruction that I got from him and the modeling that he did in that. But there's so many things like that that we need to pass on to our children that are encapsulated in this idea of the training and instruction of the Lord. Things like showing our children the value of selfless giving, of humble service without needing any recognition, and just giving and giving some more without drawing attention to the fact of giving. Showing our children what it means to really show love and grace to other people. Grace being unmerited favor and blessing. Just to show grace to people, not make demands of them or think that they're going to live or act a certain way, but being gracious. Not only that, to pass on to our children the expectation of holiness, being set apart for God, and consecration to God, that we're not our own, that we are God's, and our lives need to be lived for Him. You can teach these things. You can say, here's point 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. But I feel like unless children can see that lived out and can really understand what those points mean in practical living, it won't make any difference. And so what does it mean to nourish our children in the training and instruction of the Lord? I think it's the whole sum of godly instruction. That includes day-to-day guidance, but it also includes tradition, things we've done for years that are just a good way of doing it. It's personal convictions. It's godly values. It's all of that. But I think that the biggest challenge for me in this is I consider my responsibility as a father to nurture my children in the instruction and discipline of the Lord is how well do I know that myself? Because I can't nurture it in them if I don't have it myself. If I try to, it will come across as empty. It will come across as a false front. It will come across as hypocritical. Hopefully, it can be said of us what God said about Abraham. And this, I think, has always felt like a high bar to me. God said about Abraham, "For I know him that he will command his children after him." He will do that. He will help his children follow after me. And this doesn't stop at 4. It doesn't stop at 6 or 12 or 16 or 18 or even 30. This goes through all of our lives where hopefully all of us, whatever age we're in, we can look to those younger than us, our children, our grandchildren, for those of you who have grandchildren, and can nurture them in what it means to follow God in practical ways. I really think that there's an urgent need for older men who can nurture young fathers to nurture their own children. And maybe you've gotten all your children through school, or maybe you've gotten them all to be teenagers, or maybe you've gotten them all out of their teen years and you think, well, now I'm done. You know, I can relax a little bit now because I'm finished with my child training. But you know, as I looked at this passage, it says, "And ye fathers," those of us who are fathers never are done being fathers. We're fathers. We have children, and we hope eventually grandchildren. And I think there's such an urgent need for grandfathers to come alongside and teach and nurture, not just give instruction to, but nurture their sons as they raise their families, to pass along the wisdom, the perspective of an older life. God bless you as you think about that. I think it's an urgent need we have. Training children is a huge responsibility. And we just barely touched the tip of the iceberg, you could say. Training children has incredible challenges. And it can seem overwhelming when it's in the middle of the afternoon and things aren't going well, or it's 2 o'clock in the morning and you know, you really want to go back to sleep and the training sessions aren't going well. But there are incredible blessings that go along with nurturing our children in God's ways. Before I was married, I don't think I could have understood this, and I definitely didn't know it. But the joy of feeling a child who has come to a place of surrender, nestling into your shoulder. As a father, it's just an incredible feeling that this child has accepted what you've told them to do and they're at peace about it. There's also the joy of having young people making good choices and standing firm on the truth. It's an incredible blessing, an incredible joy. And so I hope that God can grant all of us loving homes. Homes filled with discipline, yes, and homes filled with the instruction and teaching of the Lord. Let's stand for prayer. Our Father in heaven, I thank you for the families that you've given to us, our parents, and those of us who you've given children to. Thank you for our children. Father, I pray that you would guide each of us as we seek to follow you and to nurture in those coming after us, your godly principles and your truth. Father, we want to pass on the faith, and we want it to go well with our children. We want them to live long and to prosper and be stable and to enjoy your blessing on their lives. And so, Father, I pray that you would give us the grace that we need to nurture our children and to guide them in your truth. So we pray in Jesus' name. Amen.